Find something that will make you vibrate every day. Feel like you're vibrating, you know, something that excites you. Because this journey robs us of so much joy, right? And so I talk to patients, but I'm really talking to their eggs when I'm talking to them. And I say things like, you're so pretty. So I just want you to be as joyful as possible. Attract what you want. And so you're thinking, I have beautiful eggs. I'm worth it. And you just say these things. And I think patients come to you because you are both very positive and hopeful and supportive people. And so I want my patients to always think of themselves that way. Also, I don't want to be the only one rooting them on. I want them to be joyful, find joy throughout their day. Off topic, I know.
No, I love it. I think it's very much on topic. You're absolutely right. It's
absolutely spot on. And you could even make a scientific argument, right? Like that joy that you're feeling is releasing those endorphins. It's releasing those good brain chemicals. We know lots of evidence from that, for instance, in the exercise world. And that's going to reduce the cortisol, help with stress, help with sleep. You know, if you're feeling good, you're going to eat better, right? If you feel worth it, you're going to go to the gym. You're going to take the vitamins, the supplements, eat the kale, et cetera. Right. So I think that's actually spot on.
Hi, superhumans. I'm Dr. Mavis Garcia.
And I'm Dr. Wise.
We're two of the physician leaders at Marken Fertility Center, otherwise known as Our Baby, MFC.
As fertility specialists, we've witnessed firsthand the challenges, triumphs, and the myriad of emotions that come with trying to conceive. Whether you're just starting to think about having a baby, actively trying, or facing challenges along the way, My Fertility Podcast will be your go-to resource for honest conversations and a supportive community.
So grab a cup of coffee or tea and settle in and let's demystify the world of fertility together. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of My Fertility Podcast. Today, we have a special treat for you. We are so thrilled to be joined by the amazing Dr. Amy, also known as the Egg Whisperer. Dr. Amy is a fertility specialist with a practice in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she's also the host of the number one rated fertility podcast, The Egg Whisperer Show. Dr. Amy was my first friend when I joined Instagram, so I call her my Instagram friend. And over the last 3 years, we have shared lots of stories together and connected many times over the platform. Today, she's here to join Dr. Wise and I to talk about egg quality, and I think that you're going to love this conversation.
Well, thank you for having me, you guys.
I just want to echo that. Thank you so much for joining us. We're so excited to have you. When you came on earlier, I said it feels like I'm meeting a big celebrity, and I'm kind of got sweaty palms. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I am. I'm sweaty too. The topic today is a really important one. It's going to be about egg quality and how do we improve egg quality, what supplements to take. And the science has changed so much since we all graduated, right? So I've learned a lot about egg quality from listening to you on Instagram, Dr. Amy.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I mean, I think as society changes, we are seeing, I know you are too, that women are starting their families older in life. And oftentimes our desire to have a baby doesn't match up with the viability of our eggs. And it's so frustrating for me. And I feel like I say this way too often, if men ran out of sperm, we would have found a way to reverse that. And because it's women, we just say, oh, honey, you know,
too bad.
And here is your book of egg donors that you can go through. Not to say that there's anything wrong with egg donation. There is not. But I think most women would choose to have a pregnancy with their own egg first. And so that's my approach to care is I want to leave no stone unturned and see if there's anything I could possibly do for my patient, making them feel like they're not crazy for wanting a baby at, let's say, 45, 46, or 47, just to honor their journey so that they can get to the point where they're ready for other options. But at least they feel heard and they feel like they've done everything possible. And the things that we're going to talk about today really are about longevity as well. So it's not just about egg quality, but the things that I discuss with my patients about improving their egg quality also just help long-term with their health and longevity. Because anyone who has a baby in their 40s, you have to do the math. You know how old you're going to be if you're ever going to see a grandchild, right? I mean, you're going to be in your 90s most likely at the way society is right now with people having kids at 40. The new 40 is going to be 50. Or I want to be able to remember things and you know, not suffer from other medical conditions. So the things that I tell my patients to take, I actually take them myself. 75. I don't know if you can, I mean, I look pretty good. I'm just kidding.
Part two, sharing Dr. Amy's dermatology secrets.
Totally.
No, that absolutely makes sense. I mean, Dr. Weiss and I talk about it all the time as well, that, you know, there is so much science and development, but we still can't figure out how to turn back the clock on those eggs.
Right. Right.
And one thing I would say is that even though I finished training, you know, relatively recently, I actually don't think in my training I heard a lot about improving egg quality and things like lifestyle factors. It wasn't really emphasized. It's more like, okay, this is your IVF protocol and this is what you can try and then egg donor. Mm-hmm. So I think I've actually learned a lot more about this whole topic after graduating than I even did as a fellow.
Yeah, I think in training we're taught if your FSH is over 12, your AMH is a certain level, you have a certain egg count, or you've hit this certain age, you know, good luck. You have a better chance getting struck by lightning than having a baby with your own eggs. And those things aren't true. I mean, of course, inevitably, 100% of the time we'll run out of our healthy eggs, but there isn't necessarily a way anyone can say for sure that egg quality supplements will not help you. So it's always a good thing to consider taking and trying.
And it's exactly what you say. The number of times that I've had patients have come to me for a second opinion telling me, well, they told me my only option is an egg donor and they maybe haven't even done an IVF yet, or they've done it only once. They haven't really taken any supplements. Nobody has talked to them about lifestyle. So absolutely, I agree with what you're saying. It's not that we have a magic cure or anything, but it's about giving every single patient that sense of, I really did try everything and now I'm ready for the next step if it comes to it.
Right. Right.
So tell us all of your secrets, Dr. Amy. What is your approach to egg quality?
Well, first, it's be strong mentally and physically. I think a lot of times fertility patients, they're given mixed messages about physical activity and they're told you can't be active, you can't sweat. I get emails like, how high can my heart rate be? I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, high impact, high intensity, work out, like work those muscles, you know? So I think that's important, looking at your body size. So we know they're recently published, there was a study looking at BMI and women who lost weight had a higher follicle count. So for me, that also makes me think, and egg quality could be better. Okay. Mm-hmm. So treat all your medical conditions, whether it's diabetes, thyroid, blood pressure, just make sure everything is in check. And then from other things that aren't supplements, sleeping well, so at least 7 hours. I have a hard time getting above 7 hours. So I always make recommendations for what I think I could do, because I don't think it's fair for me to say like get 8 to 9 hours of sleep. That's like nearly impossible. At least 7 hours. Hydrate well. So drink water throughout the day. And then the other thing that I was going to add is, this is really going to make you laugh. Find something that will make you vibrate every day. Feel like you're vibrating, you know, like something that excites you, because this journey robs us of so much joy. Right. And so I talk to patients, but I'm really talking to their eggs when I'm talking to them. And I say things like, you're so pretty. So I just want you to be as joyful as possible. Attract what you want. And so you're thinking, I have beautiful eggs. I'm worth it. And you just say these things. And I think patients come to you because you are both very positive and hopeful and supportive people. And so I want my patients to always think of themselves that way also. So I don't want to be the only one rooting them on. So I want them to be joyful, find joy throughout their day. Off topic, I know.
No, I love it. I think it's very much on topic. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely spot on. And you could even make a scientific argument, right? Like that joy that you're feeling is releasing those endorphins. It's releasing those good brain chemicals. We know lots of evidence from that, for instance, in the exercise world. And that's going to reduce the cortisol, help with stress, help with sleep. You know, if you're feeling good, you're going to eat better, right? If you feel worth it, you're going to go to the gym. You're going to take the vitamins, the supplements, eat the kale, et cetera. Right. So I think that's actually spot on.
Right. And that brings me to the next thing, is your diet. So avoid elimination diets. Don't make yourself crazy. Don't give yourself an eating disorder. Don't become orthorexic. There's no such thing that eliminating gluten, dairy, sugar improves your fertility. Eating a well-balanced diet, avoiding ultra-processed foods, that's going to be helpful. But I get it. Like, there's so little of this process that we can control. So it's the foods that we eat that people focus on. And sometimes it turns into a psychiatric disorder where people become extremely obsessive. And I try and get people to steer away from that. And I know there's so many mixed messages online on social media, but I promise you, if there was an elimination diet like that, that actually improved your egg quality, I would be shipping those food kits to your home if that were a thing. And as far as supplements, I start off with a really good prenatal. And I don't want to talk about brands because I'm not trying to sell a brand, but a really good prenatal. The prenatal that I tell my patients to take has fish oil in it. 2000, I use a vitamin D. That way it's 4 tablets a day. It's a lot, but you can also just take everything separately as well and get a separate fish oil, a separate vitamin D. Then CoQ10. And there are different versions of CoQ10. It all ends up the same, regardless of which one you take. So I don't focus on it has to be ubiquinol, but CoQ10. And then I'm always looking at different things to see what else we should add into, you know, the blend that I recommend to my patients. But there's something called resveratrol, and it also has pterostilbene in it. There's one brand that I tell patients to get, but they can get whatever they want. And I just send them the link for it. So resveratrol. Then the next thing is nicotinamide riboside, and that is in a supplement. And I will call out this brand. It's True Niagen, just because there's so many different makers of it out there, and you just don't know which one is real, which one to trust. But I think this is the most trustful. I'll share the dose on this one, and I'll kind of give you some tips about it. So I tell patients to start 150 milligrams first thing in the morning and then slowly go up to 300 milligrams. And the reason why I say slowly is because it can make your heart race. It can make you feel a little bit excited. And sometimes that can feel like you're having an anxiety or panic attack. And that can be really disturbing for some people if you didn't know that it was going to feel that way. And then once you're at 300 milligrams, then start to increase even higher. And you can even go to 1,000 milligrams a day. So I take 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day. It helps with my mood. I mean, I'm always looking happy, mostly because of the Botox in my forehead. But I think the True Niagen has a lot to do with it. And then I also tell my patients that your eggs need their beauty sleep just like you do. And it's not about taking melatonin to put you to sleep, but it's really for the egg quality benefit. So that's all I tell patients to take. A prenatal, True Niagen, CoQ10, resveratrol, melatonin. I know it's a lot, but sometimes I have patients that have it's like their whole day is 300 supplements, and they have like 3 pages single space typed of everything they take.
Right.
8. And I'm like, stop it. Just do your prenatal, your CoQ10, your resveratrol, your True Niagen in the morning, and then take your melatonin at night. Or just take some of them in the, you know, it shouldn't be a full-time job or even a part-time job. And then I have a couple other things. These are a little outside the box.
I think what the thing is that we live for outside the box. It's our favorite place to be.
Okay. Well, this is a little outside the box. So red light therapy is something else that I tell my patients to do every day for about 20 to 30 minutes. It's just basically a very fancy heating pad that's expensive too. It's about $700, but it has other benefits. You can use it for surgery recovery. So after an egg retrieval, my patients say that they recover much better. For patients who have endometriosis, they have less pain. Their periods are better. They sleep better. They feel more well rested the next day. So I have my patients use this up until their transfer day or up until your positive pregnancy test. The other thing is ovarian rejuvenation. And not all ovarian rejuvenation procedures are the same. And I think it's important to know how it's being done, what kind of needle is being used, how they're processing your blood for the procedure before you agree to do it with somebody. So I've probably done it on at least 300 patients now, and I collect the data that I gather as far as rise in AMH, drop in FSH, pregnancy rates, and blast formation rates. And it does seem to help. Not everybody will see a benefit, but I do think that it's significant enough that I feel strongly that every woman who is told that you need an egg donor, of course, you know, it's helpful if you are still ovulatory, that you should at least consider this an ovarian rejuvenation procedure. And there's different types out there. There's adipocyte stem cell rejuvenation, there's umbilical cord stem cell rejuvenation, and then there's ovarian PRP, which is basically from your blood. So those are the 3 different procedures that I discuss with my patients so they can see if this is something that they want to do. And I've had menopausal like primary ovarian insufficiency, FSH levels of 90, who have, you know, no ovulations for like a year, who've done one of these procedures, who are then ovulating. I've had patients ovulate and also get pregnant naturally, ovulate and get pregnant with IVF. So I'm not talking about 10% of women who are basically in menopause are going to be helped by this, but it's significant enough that it's much higher than you would ever imagine in your wildest dream. For someone who's very motivated to try this, you know, it's something that they can consider trying. So now for the next thing, and, you know, whenever I read a study, I say to myself, I'll try it. And so when I was reading about nicotinamide riboside and NAD, you know, this is 6 years ago, I've been taking it ever since, and I've been monitoring my hormone levels. And this next thing is called rapamycin. And you might have already read about it and know about the anti-E.
I've read about it. Yeah.
And so I have a seven-year-old and I'm 47 and she's going to have a kid at 50. So, oh my God, like I need to be almost like 100 to see grandkids for her, right? So I'm like, okay, I want to live forever. My sister, on the other hand, she's like, why do you want to live forever? I'm like, that's stupid. I do. And so rapamycin may increase longevity by 15%. I mean, that's a lot. So I'm the perfect age for someone who is really wanting something like that. And it might have anti-cancer properties, and it might also prevent neurological disorders like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease potentially. So I guess somewhere in a lab, someone saw the mice that were menopausal. Huh, there's a pregnant mouse now. And then someone said, oh, I wonder if this, I'm just projecting. I don't know that they really said that, but all of a sudden it seems like someone is paying attention to women and their ovaries, and it may actually reverse ovarian aging, and it might slow ovarian aging, and it might improve egg quality. And I was so happy to see a study published in January of 2024 showing that they took one group of women and they put one group of women, the same group, and they went through IVF. And that same group of women, they then put them on this medication for 3 months and they had a much better outcome. So is this something that we're going to be giving all women over the age of 37 for 3 months before they do IVF? Maybe. But this is one of those things for my patients who are interested and still trying with their own eggs, who are not ready for egg donation. This is something that I've been talking to them about and I have been prescribing for them. I have a patient, she was 41, no period, menopausal, FSH levels over 40. I gave it to her. She started ovulating again. She did get pregnant. Unfortunately, it was not a healthy pregnancy, but she still wants a chance and she still wants to try. So I don't see any reason why, if someone understands that this is not FDA approved for this indication, I don't think it ever will be just because of the work that needs to go into getting something FDA approved like this. There currently is a clinical trial at Columbia University looking at this drug. Basically, what they're doing is they're giving it to women and just measuring their hormone levels over 3 months. Okay. I mean, that's great, but I already know from the experience I've had on it that it does increase AMH, it does drop FSH. And so I'm hoping that there are going to be more studies about this, and we're going to have more people prescribed it for the purposes of potentially increasing their egg count, their egg quality. And there are some benefits in patients who have endometriosis as well. So there's some research about endometriosis. And this is actually the first research that was done on rapamycin years ago. And I just don't know why more hasn't been done in this area, but it seems like it can shrink endometriosis. And so there are some doctors who are not in this country who use it in endometriosis patients to improve their transfer success when they're doing an embryo transfer to help reduce the endometriosis and inflammation it causes before transferring. So it's all very exciting stuff. It's a little bit out there because I know a lot of doctors, they want all the trials to be published and, you know, 15 years of research. But the thing is, like, my patients can't wait. You know, my 42-year-old patient who really wants a baby with her own eggs, and I want to honor that. She can't wait 5 years or a year to find out what the outcome of any clinical trial will be. But for me, I think there is enough information out there on the side effects on fertility patients because studies have already been published. So I feel comfortable prescribing it to my patients off-label.
That's very interesting. The first time I heard about rapamycin was in that book by Peter Attia, Outlift. I don't know if you've read the book.
I didn't read the book or know anything. I didn't make that connection. Immediately when I saw the clinical trial alert, it was like, what is this? I need to know about this. Reversing menopause and ovarian aging. I'm like, this is what I've been waiting for my entire life for my patients. Yeah.
And I think you hit on a really interesting point that I think that all fertility doctors, all doctors grapple with, and we're trying to figure out where we're hearing about these new studies, new literature, new evidence about something and trying to figure out how, if, when to incorporate into practice, especially in a situation with fertility disease where, as you said, time is of the essence. Month to month really, really can make a huge difference. And that's a really, really challenging thing. Have you noticed any side effects of patients with rapamycin?
Yeah, there are two side effects I always warn them about. The first one is cystic acne, and the other one is sores in the mouth or stomatitis. So I'm like, I'll handle that side effect any day. And I would say about 20% of them will experience that. The stomatitis goes away over time. And then the cystic acne does as well. Those are the side effects that I see most commonly. And then for some people, the sores, what they can do if they get them, they can drop the dose and then go back up once things get better. But it's really cheap. The medication is about, I think it's about $20 a month. I found it, the cheapest is through Amazon Mail Pharmacy. And now they're going to run out of it, probably because I said it. And they're going to be like, oh, we're not going to offer this anymore because it's being used for fertility.
Right. Yeah. Very, very likely. So do you normally use it 3 months prior to an IVF cycle?
Well, I mean, I just started feeling comfortable prescribing it to patients doing IVF because I was kind of waiting for someone to publish this study on IVF patients. And now that there, I feel comfortable incorporating it in my practice for IVF patients. So I don't have anyone yet that has cycled on it. And I think the 3 month thing is just like a study protocol, you know?
Right.
Take it for 3 months and see what happens. But when I started checking my own levels, I saw my FSH dropped very significantly and my AMH rose by like a tenth of a point after the second month. So, you know, 2 months is all you need. It's hard to say really how long you need. I don't know yet.
Very interesting. I always learn so much from you.
I'm curious. So let's say, and this is something that I personally grapple with, so I'd love to hear your opinion. You have a new patient. She's, I don't know, 40, 41 years old. Egg reserve is on the lower side. And she's interested in doing IVF. You know, do you move forward with IVF first? Or do you try lifestyle things for 3 months, then move into IVF? Because it's time is of the essence. And I think that that's something that I personally don't think I have a great way to navigate in that conversation.
Yeah. So I think we have to be very confident with our recommendations because they're going to get very strong recommendations online through social media. So I just say do everything in tandem. Pick up that CoQ10, start taking it today. There's no reason to think that you need to take it for 2 or 3 months before you start IVF. And this concept of I have to work on my egg quality, I'm like, no, think of it as supportive. We're just going to support your egg quality and we're going to do all we can to extract really healthy, beautiful eggs as soon as possible because you can continue to work on it and do IVF at the same time. So I agree. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think waiting 2 or 3 months for someone who's 40 or 41 is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Especially when people have those lofty goals of like, I'm going to lose a large amount of weight or the general goals, like I'm going to get really healthy.
Yeah. That's and I'm glad you brought up weight loss. So I also prescribe injectable semaglutide. So I highly recommend them to my patients, especially if your BMI is over 30 to lose weight and lose weight pretty rapidly in a way that you could never have imagined before these medications were available. So my patients find them life-changing. They can't believe the results that they see when they take them. And I just tell them to stop 1 week before their egg retrieval. And then I know there are different recommendations out there as far as like when to stop them for the transfer, but I tell them to stop when they start their transfer meds. Some people say stop 2 or 3 months before, but I feel comfortable saying stop when you start transfer meds.
I have seen some fantastic results as well with semaglutide.
And now there's all these companies that are selling it online, like $300 a month, which is pretty doable. I mean, previously you'd spend over $1,000, but now that there are all these companies out there that are compounding it, I think it's more affordable than it ever has been before.
I'm curious, so going back to the red light therapy, can you tell us a little bit more about it? Like, how do you recommend it and what type of patients do you recommend it for?
Yeah, I mean, I recommend it in anyone who might have endometriosis, pelvic pain. So I know it can help with that. I recommend it in all of my patients where I'm thinking that egg quality could be an issue. And then believe it or not, I also recommend it in men. I just tell them not to wrap it around their testicles like a diaper. There should be a laugh track because that was funny. So there is evidence that in men, red light can increase testosterone. And we know that if testosterone is going up, it's because sperm production is increasing as well. So I have guys also use it. They use it for the same amount of time, but they don't put it like down there. They can put it on their chest or lower back.
Right.
And then I had a patient tell me once that she loves using it because when she uses it, she knows that her husband's not going to try and have sex with her. it's like a boner blocker because it's a shield because big and it's red and it like glows.
Is it the same as the red light therapy that the dermatologists recommend?
You can also use it on your face.
But just wash it first.
Yeah. I mean, you can use like a tent. Yeah. Don't put on. Yeah. there are different devices out there, but it comes like, I think, with like a little stand for your face. So you can also use it over your face too.
I think we're all going to be ordering one now.
I want one too. I still haven't bought one. And I tell my patients, as soon as you're done with it, I'll buy it off of you. And no one wants to sell it back to me because they want to use it forever because of their indication.
I mean, I've heard of it, but not in the context of egg quality. That's great. Well, I do have another question. You mentioned there are three types of PRP. Which one do you use?
I do ovarian PRP. I don't do adipocyte because that involves a liposuction procedure. And I don't do umbilical cord blood stem cell rejuvenation because that involves cord blood. And in the United States, it's illegal to use someone else's stem cells in your own body. So they have to go outside the country for that. And I will add, though, that I used to say that cord blood banking was one of the biggest scams in modern medicine, that there's absolutely no reason that anyone should bank their baby's cord blood until now. Because you can use those stem cells potentially from your own cord blood, I'm thinking, in the United States in the future. So I imagine telling, you know, someone in 40 years when you're ready to have a baby and you can't because your egg quality may not be as good, I can say, well, let's get your cord blood, the banked blood shipped from the cord blood bank, and I will process it and inject the stem cells into your ovary for you. I mean, I would have never thought that I would have ever had a conversation like this when I was in med school in like 2001. But now I can say that sentence actually could very easily be a reality. And it is a reality right now, but it's only a reality for people who are comfortable using someone else's cord blood that's been banked.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah. That's so interesting because you're right. I guess we've yet to find out the applications of things we have now that might be usable in many years. I have a question and sort of a bit off topic, not necessarily about equality, but the world of fertility, the field of fertility is so rapidly changing and it's just wild in terms of what we're doing now versus what we did, let's say, I don't know, 15 years ago. What do you think is going to be the next big discovery, the next big thing that's going to come in the world of fertility, let's say in 10, 15 years? Do you have a sense? Do you have a feeling?
Yeah. I mean, the two things that I really want to see, number one is IVM. So in vitro maturation, really like a proven method that works. We throw away so many immature eggs in this country and it just kills me, You know, let's say I get 10 eggs and 5 are immature. I'm like, why? You know, like how is it that I can't use these eggs and inject them? Or even if you culture them overnight, the likelihood of them converting is so poor. So that's one thing that I hope in the next 15 years that we will be able to master. And scientists, I know, are working on it. The second thing is whole genome sequencing from the DNA that's extracted from an embryo. When you tell someone, oh, I'm going to genetically screen your embryo, they're like, oh, great, the baby's going to be normal and not have autism and not have any birth defects and not have any rare syndromes or disorders. And I'm like, No, that's not actually what we do. All we're looking at is the chromosome. I hope for that day, and I think it's going to come soon. And I think that would be the next biggest breakthrough for us, because then we would have a better way of prioritizing embryos for transfer. And if we can do that, we can also really see if an embryo is mosaic or not. And this whole concept of mosaicism, low versus high, I mean, we'll really know as much as humanly possible about an embryo. So the reason why we can't do it now for our listeners is because embryos are so small and the amount of DNA that's extracted is so small. So it's very hard to do that kind of assessment on such a small piece of DNA. You can do it on a person because there's one you can extract, but you can't do that on such a tiny cell that you're extracting DNA from an embryo. But that day will come that we will be able to say, this is the entire genome that we have sequenced from your embryo, and these are the results, so you know everything before you do a transfer. So those are the two things that I hope that I will live to see. And I would love for men to run out of sperm by the time they're 40.
A little bit of justice, a little bit of equality.
I know, don't you think? I mean, every time a couple comes in, I want to say to him, now it's your turn to take your pants off. And I'm going to stick something up your crotch, you know, rather than watching them play Sudoku on their phone.
It's true. It's, you know, as much as I'm sure we all talk about equality and equity, and, you know, we're all women in medicine and running businesses / podcasting / this, we want to do it all. Yet, It feels a little bit like we're almost cheating ourselves, or I always feel like I'm sort of a bit of a traitor. I say, well, it's kind of the age of the woman that matters. The guy, not so much, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that always kills me.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, one way to improve egg quality, especially in IVF, is use the youngest sperm possible that you can find.
True.
All young sperm. So. You know, when I meet someone and I say, well, how long is your journey going to take? You know, if you're someone who's really motivated to do everything for your own eggs, you might be on a 3-year journey until you move on if it doesn't work. So I always say, look, your husband is, let's say, 48. Let's freeze his 48-year-old sperm now so that if we're still doing this when he's 50, it's going to make your eggs look better to have younger sperm, because we know all the things that go along with older sperm, like having an increased risk of chromosomal abnormalities if a guy's over 50. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing, is if you're 43 and you're with a 60-year-old, but my point is that if, let's say, I have a 40-year-old patient that's with someone in their 60s and she's doing IVF hoping for a pregnancy with her own eggs, I'll sometimes say, why not consider a sperm donor? Because you might have a good egg in there, but we might be matching up your good egg with his chromosomally abnormal sperm. Is that fair to you as a woman, that you have to compromise your DNA because you're with an older man and he can still do this and you'll have to use an egg donor? And a lot of times when you're taking care of a couple like that, he already has kids. So those are some of the tough conversations that I have with people up front. They're not easy. And I'm very nosy. You know, they'll say things like, no one's ever talked to me like this before. I'm like, I know, I'm very nosy. I have a big nose.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. We've had conversations like that. They're not easy, but ultimately you want to do what's best for the patient, for the couple, right? To get them to be parents in one way or another. So that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's true. You have to know the social connections of who's with whom and what's going on. And are there other children? What's the bigger plan? With the caveat, I always try and tell my patients, are you going to stay with this person for longer? Is this the person or not? We need to know. It's very important.
I was literally going to say that. I mean, because that's good for your egg quality. Because I got to tell you, if you're going to be separated or divorced when you're older, and you don't have access to those embryos anymore, that affects your egg quality, because now you have to start over. And that's really not fair to the woman. But at the same time, you should really think about, if you're not going to be with this person, consider freezing eggs before you start your pregnancy journey with them. And during COVID, I would ask this question. I don't feel like I need to as much anymore, just because people are less stressed in general. But I used to ask on all my first calls with people, I would ask them, what's the likelihood that you guys are still going to be together in 1 year from today? And I was so surprised by some of the answers. And sometimes the husband would say something totally different than the wife. I had this one couple, and I think it actually made them better as a couple, because I asked this question. I said, what's the likelihood that you'll be together in a year? He said, like, they both answered at the same time. He's like 30%, and she goes 95%. And then she looked at him. Down him. Like, I was like, oh my God, do I need to call like the police and go do a welfare check on him? But actually, them having that conversation about like what's wrong in the relationship, they're very strong as a couple now. And so I think looking at your relationship, it's a great point that it's really important as women to do, because I unfortunately have had patients who've separated and then they've aged out of having a pregnancy with their own eggs.
Yeah.
And that's really a hard thing to see. So if you're having relationship problems, you don't need a man's permission to freeze eggs. Just go ahead and do it without thinking that you need his permission.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Those are really sad. I've been doing this for 11 years now. And I remember a patient who they tried to get pregnant together with her partner, and eventually they made embryos. They didn't come back for an embryo transfer. And then all of a sudden I get the disposition on my desk to discard this beautiful euploid embryo. So I called her and she was like, besides herself bawling, she had no option. She had to discard them because they had now not been together, and she's older and had really lost that opportunity to be a mom because she was in a relationship that didn't go anywhere. And I'd never forgot her. It absolutely broke my heart. So yeah. I do have those conversations with patients. And I know sometimes that makes us sound like, hey, lady, I'm here to give me a baby. You're not a marriage counselor or whatever, you know? So it can make us seem very, very nosy, like you say. But when you've been doing this long enough and you see those cases, you really do have to put those things into question. The same for patients who are going through cancer treatment, who are freezing their eggs, and they might have a relationship there. But cancer is a huge stressor, right? And this might be their only opportunity to get some eggs out. So it's a good thing to think about and bring it up.
Well, one of the debates that often comes up at fertility conferences that we'll see, and I think I know what you're going to say. Do you think that, let's say in a few years, all women at between 25 and 30 should just freeze their eggs, full stop?
Yes, I think they should consider it. And considering egg freezing means you learn about your fertility. So I think everyone should take my egg freezing class. And it doesn't mean that everyone should freeze their eggs, but they should kind of do a check-in and see if they want to have kids. And if there's a chance you do, freeze your eggs. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can turn a skin cell into an egg cell in the future, but I wouldn't bank on that mm-hmm. is going to be reality for us. It's possible. I mean, I think they just published something out of Oregon related to, you know what I'm talking about, but I would say everyone should consider egg freezing. And I don't think it should be everyone should do it, but I think you can prevent a lot of the infertility that we're seeing due to age by freezing eggs at a young age. Yep. So egg freezing first became available, like more popular. People were doing it as a reaction to being older, a reaction to having levels that weren't very good. And so people were freezing bad eggs. And now things have changed. People are freezing the good eggs because they're freezing younger, which is great to see. They're freezing when they're 28, 29, you know, not even 32. But I feel like more and more people can be doing it, especially coupled people. So people who are already married or partnered, or even the independent women who have a baby. You can freeze eggs as a way to preserve your fertility, to prevent secondary infertility. And more people should be doing that, especially with embryos.
Absolutely.
And that's almost in a way kind of back to our whole topic around egg quality. That's kind of the best way to maximize your egg quality.
Your own egg donor, you know?
That's the ideal. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So many women who were having these conversations with, I'm sure, about their poor egg quality, low eggers or whatever, so many of them say, I wish I had frozen my egg when I was younger, or I wish I knew all this information when I was younger, because maybe I would have done things differently.
In the last few minutes of this conversation, do you have something that you would like to share, a sort of a message to patients all over the world? Because I know you reach people all over the world. What would you say to people right now who are struggling with infertility, or people who are discouraged because they've been told they need an egg donor, or struggling with egg quality?
I would say something to the lines of, hope never killed anybody. Having hope doesn't hurt and it doesn't kill you. And it's okay to be positive, and it's okay to really want something when other people are telling you it's not going to happen. That is okay. And I have to remind myself that when I talk to my patients as well. I mean, I see the 47-year-old who hasn't had periods in 10 years, who's FSH is 90, and she still wants a baby with her own eggs, and she is struggling, but I have to show her so much love, and I have to say, it's okay to still have hope, but I'm going to give you that gentle reality check and say, this is not the way it's going to happen for you, and I want you to be a mom as young as you possibly can be, and to think about all the ways to do that. So I think that's probably the struggle is real, and you just have to be really kind and loving to yourself and really take care of your mental health from the beginning. I think what happens is people struggle and then they go down and they spiral and then they have depression, anxiety, and then sometimes substance use disorder is related to alcoholism. A lot of people will abuse alcohol and they may not be as open about it. So I think taking care of your mental health from the very beginning, and that's why I talk about vibrating every day. You know, find something that like makes you so happy that you like look forward to do it every single day, like every day. Like for me, it's like, I love my music. If I'm just have a moment, I'm going to turn it on. I'm going to rock out. And it's just what I do. So I often ask my patients when I do a blood draw or when I'm doing an embryo transfer. And so I'll ask my patient when I'm doing their blood draw, what song do you want to listen to? You know, and then a lot of them are like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, I need you to find that. I need you to find your song. Find that song. Find the song that makes you happy. And then I'll say the same thing in an embryo transfer. I say, let me know what your playlist is for our embryo transfer. You know, so they're thinking about something that brings them joy and brings them happiness. So that's along the lines of don't allow this journey to rob you of the joy that you deserve every single day. Life's too short. You know, we're only here for half a second. Live this life for you and make the decisions that'll make you happy and bring you joy. So I know that's a really long answer, but those are the few things that I would want people to remember and know that it's okay to have hope. Don't allow this process to rob you of your joy and get help for any mental health issues you have from the very beginning of the journey. Don't wait until you spiral.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's perfect. I couldn't say it better myself. Thank you so much, Dr. Amy.
You're welcome.
We really appreciate you coming to our podcast. It's been a real honor.
Thank you so much for coming. Just to echo what Dr. Garcia said, I'm an avid listener of your podcast. And even though I know the information, the way that you frame it and the way that you speak with patients and the way that you give the information is fantastic. And you really have this incredible balance of that empathy and providing that hope, but still giving the reality of the numbers and the reality of the situation. And it's fantastic.
It's a struggle for us because you don't want to be that negative person.
Thank you so much for being
here.
You're
welcome. Of course, you guys are the best.
And that's a wrap for today, superhumans. If you're looking to connect, get social with us. Follow us on YouTube and Instagram at My Fertility Podcast, or visit us online at MarkinFertility.com. And don't forget, follow, subscribe, and share your favorite episode.
Thanks for listening to My Fertility Podcast and for being a vital part of our community. We know you've got this.
We're signing off until next Tuesday.
If you found this episode of My Fertility Podcast helpful, please take a moment to head over to the review section and leave us your thoughts. Your reviews and comments are incredibly valuable to us and help guide future episodes. We also welcome you to direct your questions to info@myfertilitypodcast.com.
My Fertility Podcast is produced by Rabbit Media, Inc. in conjunction with Dr. Garcia and Dr. Weiss. Music from Mixkit, Raising Me Higher by Audrey Stellino. My Fertility Podcast is not intended to replace any type or variation thereof professional medical, health, or legal advice, nor should the content be taken as medical advice. Please contact your primary healthcare professional regarding any medical questions you may have. The information presented in this podcast is based on the knowledge and understanding of the host at the time of recording. Medical knowledge is constantly evolving, and new research may change the understanding of health-related topics. While we strive to provide accurate and up-to-date information, we do not guarantee the completeness, accuracy, or timeliness of the content. The views expressed in this podcast by guests are not those of the host or the management. This podcast is not intended to impose any type of discrimination. My Fertility Podcast and its management are not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast.